Mic check.
Mic check.
Now it's time to start the show. Now it's time to start the show.
Welcome to the Two Men Will Pack. Every week, running it back.
Beam and Web try to act like they know. Now it's time to start the show. Yo, for show. Let's go.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Two Man Wolfpack. As always, my name is Adam, coming to you from my basement in Minneapolis, and dialing in from Chicago is my good friend,
Brian.
Brian, today is Monday, March 20th, 2017. Happy spring, everyone. It's been 14 days since our last podcast. The Wolves were 3-4 over the 14-day stretch, bringing our overall record to... I think we're 28-41.
Yep, that's right.
All right. 27 games back of the Warriors for the one seed in the West and 5 games back of the Nuggets for the 8 seed in the playoffs. If you remember 2 weeks ago, Brian, we're only 3 games back in the Nuggets. So 3-4 did not cut it. We're now 5 games back. It's basically done. There's only 13 more games left on the schedule, and we would not only have to leapfrog Denver, there's also a few teams between us and them. So,
yeah, I think lately, as of like yesterday or the day before, Portland was 6-2 in their last 8. So Portland started playing better. But yeah, but basically it looks like the Nuggets are hot. They're probably going to finish the season at 500. So I don't think we're going to go 13-0 to close the season.
No, probably not. And you know what? It's not the end of the world. It would have been really cool if we could have made the playoffs, but now we get a better draft pick. And at least the Wolves have been playing well as of late. So there's some positivity going into the next season, which I think is more important than making the playoffs.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, well, should we agenda and then get into it, or should we just get right into it?
Quick agenda, news and notes, mailbag, where are they now? Good, bad, ugly, good, better, bad, if we have time. Pretty standard agenda.
Run of the mill. Yeah, so, you know, at this point, pretty clear we're not going to make the playoffs. We managed to go from, I think we were at the 9 seed for a little while, but now we're already back down to like 12th as New Orleans passed us. And frankly, lately, like the past few games, we just haven't played very well. So, and that's all fine. We should definitely be trying to get as low as we can in a super loaded draft, probably one of the most loaded drafts of the past 3 to 5 years. And it's all good, man. Like, we played well. We know that we have it in us to beat some good teams. I think the big question I have for you is, are we better without Zach LaVine?
No, I actually don't think we are, even though I know that's the hot thing to say right now because we've won some big games after Zach LaVine got hurt. You know, friend of the pod, Brian, Jonathan Charks of TheRinger.com wrote a nice article. Basically, he said the Wolves and the Bucks have improved since both teams have had large injuries. And he sort of broke down why for both teams. And for the Wolves, it was when we have Rush on the court, he's not a negative defender. And his theory is, Jonathan's theory is, there's a network effect to the Wolves where they can only handle having two bad defenders on the court at the same time. And as soon as you add the third, they break down. And then also when LaVine on offense, when LaVine's out, obviously Towns, Wiggins, and Rubio too have gotten more usage and more looks, which he thinks is a positive thing. So no, though, I don't.
Both are true. I mean,
I don't know if we
both
were,
are reasonable options.
I don't know if we were using him right. I've been saying for a long time, I really think he should come off the bench, and I'm going to continue saying it. Like, we have the worst bench in the NBA. We have a one-man scoring machine who doesn't quite fit with the parts we have in the starting lineup. Why wouldn't you bring him off the bench? And please don't say, oh, he's too good to come off the bench, or he's going to be unhappy coming off the bench. I don't care. Like, you got to do his best for the team, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're right. I think both his points are good. Like, Towns... It's crazy when you think a guy's numbers start to go down after a certain point, right? Like, if you shoot 60 shots, you're not going to shoot 50%. But I think we're seeing an offense, Towns can handle a lot, but his percentages haven't gone down at all. Like, he could easily be getting another, like, 4 or 5 shots a game, and he wouldn't do any worse. So
his last however many games, I have a good stat here somewhere. Ty Hollins, here's the cool stat. Last 31 games, he's averaging 28, 13. He's shooting 60% from the floor, 67% true shooting percentage, 41% from three, 83% from free throw line. It's pretty amazing, right? Usage goes up and efficiency goes up.
Yeah, you don't see that a lot, especially with someone who is already pretty high.
No, you really don't see that a lot. But anyways, getting back to LaVine, I think he's too good at offense for the team to be worse as a team without him. His skill set is like, we need that skill set from a player. It'd be nice if he could improve defensively, but I feel like it's on Thibs to figure out, here's the pieces, how do they fit together? I think saying we don't need this piece and we're better off with Brandon Rush playing all those minutes probably isn't the best long-term solution.
Yeah, it's probably not. I would agree. No, and I think the other point was just about we can't support three bad defenders. Like, what team could support three awful defenders out of five? I don't think any team could. And it's just clear that, like, we need some help there. Maybe it's just even is Dunn a better answer at starting two than Brandon Rush? The dude can't shoot, so it probably hurts spacing, but
he's been
Towns can do so much. And Wiggins does so much. Not like Wiggins needs spacing. He's just jacking up a shitload of long twos and driving to the rim.
No, that's exactly right. And Dunn it too. I mean, we've been tinkering with that, not in the starting lineup, but he's been playing with Tyus a bit. And when he's on the court with Tyus, he plays the two, and it's actually worked in limited minutes. So that's probably something to explore.
Yeah, I think so. And just having a good defender out there probably helps. So that makes a big difference. But one thing I do want to say or talk about a little bit after watching the game, I believe it was Friday night. Man, Karl Anthony Towns, really bad at defense.
Yeah, I know. I feel
he's
like
quite a bit worse at defense than I realized. And he doesn't look like he's getting any better.
I feel like his heart's not in it. Like,
you don't think?
Well, it could be one of two things. As with any player who lacks defensive results, it's either effort or ability. With Towns, I really don't think it's ability. He's really good, right? But it's a little concerning when he seems to be pretty happy with his current standing in the league as the next up-and-coming superstar. As I think he is, he should be happy. He's played great. But I hope that how do I say this right? I hope that the look that he gives when he's on the court of his intensity, he clearly wants people to think that he's very intense and takes the game seriously. You know, when he messes up, he hits his head, he yells at himself.
Yeah.
I hope that's true. I hope all of that's true. I don't know if it is, but if it is, you would think he'd pick up the effort on the defensive end.
Yeah, I would think so too. But man, in the Heat game is where I especially noticed it. But like, Whiteside just had probably 9 uncontested dunks on the pick and roll, where Towns was just like near him and kind of had his hand on him, but just wasn't close enough or didn't really contest. And that was super frustrating just because these guys got really easy looks and Towns is kind of around, but he doesn't make the effort to rotate over. I don't know if it's because he doesn't want to get dunked on or he doesn't want to get fouls or he just doesn't want to waste the energy on defense. We're just like not at the point competitiveness wise where we can have a guy, you know, not try at all on defense. So really frustrating to watch Towns play D. He like couldn't be really much worse than he is right now. And hopefully he tries harder next year in defense.
You know who didn't mind his lack of defense, Brian?
Andrew Wiggins.
The entire NBA. Karl Anthony Towns got Western Conference Player of the Week last week. Kind of an offensive award.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, it is. Anyways, just a little tidbit there. Do you have more Towns ranting to do?
No, I think everyone knows and kind of agrees. Hopefully he doesn't just get comfortable being a good offensive player. We already have another young stud. He's really good at offense and doesn't play defense. Actually, we have three of them.
Well, at least we locked up Gorgie. Don't worry about it.
God, sorry. Well, I think you're trying to get me worked up again, but man, Gorgie, not looking very good lately.
Yeah, not so much.
He can't really do hardly anything out there. At playing 30 minutes, so his minutes are up. Averaging 7 points, 8 rebounds, 1.5 assists, and over his last 5. But just doesn't really... he hasn't really had an impact game in a long time. I mean, there are games earlier in the season where you'd watch him and he would do a lot. He'd hit the mid-range jumpers. You know, he'd stretch the floor. He'd make some good passes. He'd at least rotate over. But I'm also biased because in the Miami game, he was 0 for 7, but he's just not really doing much. Like, he hasn't shot more than 7 shots in a game lately, and I really regret that signing.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a little bad stretch for Gorgui. I don't think he's all that bad of a player, but I agree with you. I don't think it's a good signing, and we've talked about this, but the puzzle pieces don't quite fit together. You know, you can have 5 good players, and if you throw them all together, you're not necessarily going to have a good team because they interact with each other often in basketball. It's not like baseball. So, yeah, probably would take that signing back.
Yep.
Let's move on to a positive note, Brian.
On the Gorgui, last thing. Do you think we could even move him at this point? Like, do you think someone would take him, or do you think we're just kind of stuck with him for the next 3 years?
I think we could probably move him.
The next 4 years. I forgot he's still on his rookie deal.
Yeah, I think we could probably move him. It wouldn't be us getting value for value, though. It'd be somewhat like, you know.
No, I mean, at this point, it would just be getting out of the contract. I don't think you get anything back for him of value.
Yeah, I agree. It'd be a one-sided deal to sort of get rid of the contract, which is not
good.
That's
a lot, man. I actually don't know if we could.
I mean, it's really bad, right? We re-signed him a few months ago. We had the option to wait until this offseason. He'd be a restricted free agent. We could have matched an offer sheet. We chose not to do that. At the time, Brian, you were very against it. I think I was fairly neutral on it, if I remember right. You were right, though. It clearly wasn't a good move. We should have waited until this offseason. If we wanted to re-sign him, we could have got him for less money, probably. Not a lot less, though, but I bet you less money.
Yeah, that's the thing. We just have this history of paying more than, like, a little bit above market. Not a lot. Like, it wasn't a crazy contract. It just wasn't one that I wanted to do.
If Joe Smith wasn't worth 6 years, 120, I don't know who was.
Yeah.
I'm going back to your history. You said we have a history of pay. Yeah, I agree.
I know you do. No, I just, like, well, even Peck's contract, remember, no one had an offer on Peck. He was a restricted free agent. And after free agency was over, we paid him, like, $4 million more than we thought we would. That's basically the Gorgui deal. Like, we could have waited. I think Gorgui would have been happy if he made $12 million a year, and we just didn't need to pay him that much, and it was just not a good signing. And now we have four more years.
I think he would have gotten a lot, though. Like, you think he would have only gotten $12 million a year as a restricted?
I think there's restricteds get a little underpaid by opposing teams at time because
good point.
You don't want to tie up your cap space with a dude where someone else could just match, and the time in free agency is valuable. Yeah, and I just don't get the sense that there was a lot of people who wanted a guy who's, you know, per 36 minutes are pretty bad, and his career is 30 minutes, and he's going to get you between 9 and 10 points and 7 and 8.5 rebounds and 1.5 assists and 1 block. Like, that's not a guy that anyone's dying to get.
Good point.
Okay.
Can we move on to something positive? Now you're all sad.
Yeah, I know.
Worked up.
Cheer me up.
You need to change your face because Ricky Rubio set a new franchise record in the game against the Wizards. 19 assists in the game. I was at this one. It was just a good game the whole time, and Ricky played out of his mind. It was the best I've ever seen Ricky play, I think. I got to point out, Brian, the top comment in the Reddit thread about this, courtesy of user Waldo RDRS, he said, quote, "You see how effective Walls are against Hispanics," unquote, because John Wall was defending him. Amazing game by Ricky. He had some insane passes in the game, and not only the 19 assists, he's been looking to score lately. We had an email, Brian, which I'll get to in a little bit, but he pointed out that Ricky was having a career year, which I was very surprised by and skeptical of. So I checked it out, went to Basketball Reference, and he's right, which is astonishing considering how bad Ricky was for the whole almost first half of the season. He was having a career year on the other side. And on the whole now, he's having a really nice career year. Really efficient. His true shooting percentage as good as it's ever been. Effective field goal percentage as good as it's ever been. Field goal percentage good as it's ever been. Free throw percentage career high. 3-point shooting not so much, Brian. Shooting 31% from beyond the arc. which is his career average, actually. So that's still a problem. But overall, career year by Ricky, and way to go to turn it around. Really good to see.
Yeah, he's been awesome. I don't know, man. He always has these stints. He's never had a stint like this, let's say that. This is probably the best he's ever played in the NBA. So it's obviously very encouraging to see him like reach a new height, and he's still young-ish. So maybe he's learning some stuff, but love the way he's playing. He's playing hard. His vision's never been in question. And he's attacking the rim way better. That's the big thing that I notice, is like he's not afraid to drive. His mid-range looked really good. Miami game, he was awesome. But yeah, it was getting to the bucket, like not breaking his layups like usual. And if he can do that, he's a different player, and he has been. So I was totally wrong on trading him. If he could play like this for sustained length, which is what we say at the end of the season every year, he'd be great. But I guess we'll see.
I know. So he's played in 63 games this year, Brian. He's only played 63 games in a season, two other seasons.
That's crazy.
This is his third season playing over 60 games. That's insane, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that jumped out to me. Anyways, nice job, Ricky. Keep it up, man.
Do you think he'll be able to keep it up next year? Or do you think this is like, remember at the end of last year when we're like, oh my God, Ricky can shoot threes now?
No. Well, it depends what you mean. Can Ricky shoot?
No, not even shooting. So I don't think his shooting's that much better outside of getting to the rim. But like this level of play, where do you think he shakes out next year? I guess my question is, where do you think he shakes out next year between where he is now and career average?
Closer to career average. I think he'll be closer to career average.
Okay.
I think somewhere in between the two.
Well, obviously. That was my point, but where?
Yeah, somewhere in between the two, closer to career average.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, I think that's right. I think, honestly, I would go a little bit higher because I think the way he's playing right now is so much above career average. He's last five shooting 55%. I don't, obviously, his 3-point percentage won't keep up, but he's, you know, he's driving, he's getting to the rim, 11 assists, 19 points. I think he could settle out at like a 12 and 10 guy, which frankly is really good for Ricky and for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been really fun watching Ricky play. You know, we had some great wins the last couple of weeks. We also had some really bad losses, but the constant's been Ricky's played pretty damn well, which has been nice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on, Brian. The Wolves have moved on from Lance Stephenson. He will not be back because he really just couldn't stay healthy. Really no fault of his own. The Wolves have instead announced, I think they announced this today, Brian, that they signed Omri Caspi.
Yeah.
He was released by New Orleans. He's a 6'9 small forward, been in and out of the league for a while now. People in the Wolves community going on the blogs and message boards are weirdly excited about it. Looking up his stats, he's kind of a career okay shooter, like slightly below average, doesn't rebound much, doesn't pass the ball much. From watching some highlight videos on YouTube, doesn't appear to be a great defender. I'm not excited.
No, he's a pure offense guy. He's like a athletic wing scorer who's kind of underperformed throughout his career.
Isn't someone who underperforms throughout their career just an underperformer?
Adam, I think he sounds like a Timberwolf.
That's a very good point. Welcome to the team, Omri.
I think you just described the guy we thought Derek Williams could be. No, he's always been talented, but yeah, he's a limited player. And frankly, if he's the eighth man on the roster and the third guy off the bench, he's, you know, maybe a better shooting version of Shabazz, frankly.
You know what I'm kind of sick of, Brian? Talking about these 10-day contracts at the end of the season every year on the podcast.
He should be on a legitimate team. Like, he's a guy who, if you stuck him on a playoff contender and someone got hurt, he could be the ninth guy and come in and score some points and have a moment. He should not be on the Timberwolves.
Okay. Clearly, there probably wasn't a lot of interest, or he probably would have gone to a... And let's take that back. Let's unpack that. Do you think he's better off signing with the Wolves? I mean, if he had multiple offers, clearly he signed here hoping he'll be back next year. Whereas if he goes and signs to a playoff contender, he's probably a rental, and then he has to find a job again.
Good point.
I guess, which would you do, Brian?
If I was him, I would go for the playoff run, try and get a moment and get paid. Because you could do the old Jerome James and like have a run of four good games and get paid $4 million a year. Versus if he stays on here, he's probably thinking like, you know, league minimum, maybe a little bit more, maybe a couple $1 million a year. But again, it's not like there's a guaranteed spot for us. We just have all the cap room in the world. So if things go at least okay, we might keep him.
Yeah, I think that's a good breakdown. He's not like very good though, Brian. Am I missing something? Am I looking at the wrong numbers? Okay, so he's a career.
He's a 40% three-point shooter over the last three seasons. That's pretty good.
That is good, actually. A career 37%.
What's a career worth these days?
Yeah, 44% from the field. Effective field goal percentage of 51%, which is not very good. He only shoots 68% from the free throw line. That's obviously not great. Looking at some advanced numbers, his true shooting
percentage. Tell me his advanced numbers.
His true shooting percentage is 54%. Career true shooting percentage as a small forward. Not so good.
Okay.
Assist rate, 8%. Steal rate, 1%. Total rebound percentage, 10%. You know, it appears he's above average from three. Hard stop. Those are his strengths.
Okay.
Do you disagree?
No, it's fine, man. Yeah, he's not going to move the needle. I think people get excited because at least we're signing guys where they do some things really well. And, you know, the big problem with our team is how we're constructed. So maybe we find this guy that does something well and there's a little bit of a fit.
Good point. Good point. Plus, I get a little excited, too, when we sign someone just because the team obviously hasn't been great. So you get the mystery box, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything, even a boat.
It could be a boat.
All right, let's move on. Brian, I'm surprised you're not in mourning right now. In case you didn't know, Bielitsa is out for the season with a injured left foot. Kind of sucks. He was starting to play okay. On the whole, a really bad season from Bielitsa.
Yep, I agree. You know how I feel about Billy. He always has the talent, but can never quite get there between the years. And that's all I got to say. I'm disappointed that he couldn't do more.
We should trade him. I feel like there's probably some market for him. And his contract's incredible. It's really cheap. And clearly we're not going to use him right. Or maybe he's just not good enough. But I would just get rid of him. Get like a second round draft pick or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't agree. Well, I'd like to keep him. I think
I can't believe it.
Shut up. Yeah, obviously I love Belly. He's a stretch four that we need. He's just not as good as he should be. That's all. We just need a better version of Belly. And I think that better version of Belly is Belly with confidence.
Okay. Again,
if we could combine Lance Stevenson's confidence with Belly's basketball ability, we'd have the perfect guy.
Great point. I agree. Let's make it happen.
Would you like to get rid of Belly for almost nothing?
Yeah, I would. He just doesn't bring much. I think he has 1 year left on his contract. I'd have to look that up, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
Yeah, I think we signed him for 3 years, 12 million.
Yeah, I very much doubt he's going to be back after next year, and the odds of him impacting the team next year are not good. I'd clear out our bench as much as possible and just bring in new guys, and that's probably part of it, getting rid of him.
Yeah, I wish we could just trade him to the Spurs and set him free.
I know.
We'll just send. It's like the equivalent of sending him to a farm upstate. Like, let's go. Let him go where he could play.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Isn't it weird he shot 31% from three this season?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's supposed to be one of his strengths. and he's literally shooting the same percentage as Ricky Rubio, who's maybe the worst three-point shooter. Yeah, it is weird. You still love him, though.
I still love him. And what's weird was when you watch him shoot, like, early in the season, he just bombs threes. It's like, damn, this guy's good. And he can shoot. And then something happens, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's Belly, and he has no confidence, and everything misses, and he doesn't really want to do anything.
I feel like you give him a break because he's European. So you're like, your default is he must be good at fundamentals and threes. So let's find a reason why.
But he can shoot threes. You've seen the games where he just bombed threes. Remember the Lakers game when he started? That's my new theory. He just needs to start every game.
I've had games where I bomb threes. It doesn't mean I'm good at threes.
Have you?
Yeah, I totally have.
I don't know if you have.
I think if we had a 3-point contest, I'd win 1 out of 3 against you.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
What are we talking, like rack of balls NBA 3-point contest or just like standing still and shooting?
I'd take either. I'd probably get really tired in the NBA 3-point contest.
Yeah, I'd take me in the NBA 3-point contest. I think standing still and shooting, I think you would adjust well if we were just in one spot.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'll take that.
Yeah, maybe 1 in 3. I don't know, man. I haven't shot a 3-pointer in like a year. I don't really shoot baskets anymore, which is quite sad.
That is sad. We haven't had an athletic update in a while.
Not much to report. I've got my half marathon in 2 weeks.
Feeling good?
Yeah, I feel okay. I'll finish it. It's just a half marathon.
That's true. I have my marathon in 7 months.
Feeling good?
No. No.
I think I may sign up for Chicago again to force myself to exercise for the next 6 months.
Having something helps.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have for news and notes. Do you have any other news or notes?
You know, no, that's really it. Not a lot else going on with the team. I'm just excited for the draft coming up and hopefully to watch more of our guys, our future Timberwolves play over the weekend.
Good point. I will be at the Spurs game tomorrow night. It's on ESPN at 8:30 start time in Minnesota. Gonna regret that. I'm gonna be very tired.
Okay, what's next?
Let's move on to the mailbag.
You've got mail.
Thanks for the emails, everyone. TimberwolvesPodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at TWolvesPodcast. Really do appreciate the emails and tweets, guys. First email is from longtime listener Mark in Poland. Mark, thank you for the email. Always love them. This was a while ago, Brian. This was 11 days ago he sent this. He said, gents, the Wolves have won 4 of 6 since your last pod, which was 16 days ago. You should probably record an episode before tomorrow night's game against the Warriors as a way of either preempting the inevitable disappointment of getting crushed by the league's best team or as a reverse jinx heading into a game that is winnable if Golden State's three-point ability goes cold. Either way, you can't lose. We did record one before that game, and I got to say, it worked. got a W. Mark finishes email with the way he's been playing lately. Cat, a.k.a. the Fresh Prince of Target Center, should destroy any Warrior center. He was right about that. Look for this all night long after every easy putback dunk, and he attached a picture of Towns shouting, "Dame!" which is incredible. Mark, thank you for the email as always. Always very enjoyable. Next email is from Paul, who happens to be my brother, Paul. Thank you for the email. Appreciate it as always. Paul sent a link to Darko, basically a new Where Are They Now link that was done on Yahoo Sports regarding Darko. He, when we did our last Where Are They Now segment, Brian, he had started to become a farmer, and he is solidly a farmer now. Apparently really happy doing it. Pretty good read, pretty good quotes. Thanks for sending the link along, Paul. Everyone check it out. It's on Yahoo Sports.
Wait, where is he now?
He's a farmer.
What's he farming, though?
Crops.
Is he reaping what he sows?
Reaping what he sows. Bring him to market. Anyways, let's move on.
Okay.
Last email is from Norway Pete. Longtime international listener, I think first time writer. So thanks for the email, Pete from Norway. He said he's been a long Wolves fan since he was given a basketball magazine in the 90s that has been a big piece of the T-Wolves signing Garnett, complete with a poster and all. At the time, we could not follow the team from Norway the way we can today, but after playing a lot of NBA games on my Nintendo 64 and watching the few highlights I came across, Tom Gugliotta emerged as Pete's favorite NBA player. As Garnett once said, quote, "'cause Googs is nice," unquote. that's pretty great. I always like Gugliotta too. Anyways, and I can totally relate to playing a lot of basketball on Nintendo 64. Paul, my brother, and I used to play all the time. Anyways.
Actually, real quick pause there. I actually felt like the N64 was pretty garbage for sports games. What do you think?
Yeah, on the whole, I think it was. There was Madden 64, though, which I was unbelievable at. Like, I don't know if I ever lost. I was so good. I'd be the Dallas Cowboys. There was, like, you know, in Madden back in the day, there'd be, like, four or five plays that, like, were broken. Like, they couldn't be stopped. And I obviously just ran those every time and would score on every possession.
Did I beat you once?
No, you're thinking of the game at your house.
No, I know I'm not thinking of the game at my house. I played Madden N64 at your place once, and I beat someone who said they're really good. It must have been Hansen.
Oh, Hansen wasn't really good.
Oh. Remember, like, surprisingly beating someone. Maybe you and I were, like, weirdly close, but you still won.
Did you have your cheat team in? Did you have
No, that was players? Different systems.
Well, you still could create players, I think.
No, I didn't create players at your house to play you in Madden 64.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you weren't even good at the Madden games. You literally just created, you spent all your free time creating players and, like, just making, like, all-star rosters.
Definitely not. Okay. But sometimes, yes.
Anyways, let's get back to Pete's email.
But yeah, basketball was garbage on the 64. Most underrated system of all time for sports games, Dreamcast. Dreamcast was awesome because that gave us NBA 2K.
Oh, interesting. I never had a Dreamcast. I didn't play any Dreamcast.
Not surprised.
What Dreamcast compete with? N64?
It was this weird in-between system. It was kind of between the, like, PS2 and before they got really good. No, it was before the PS2, I think.
Was it like
it was
PS1?
Kind of like between... Sorry, what?
Was it like PS1, PS2?
It was between, like, the PS1, N64, and PS2.
Okay. Gotcha. Anyways... On to Pete's questions. Pete said, Ricky Rubio is my current favorite Wolves player. There's one thing that seldom gets mentioned. Were you aware that he turned pro at 14 years old, Brian? Were you aware of that?
I was not, but I'm not surprised. That's just what European athletes do.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it either. For some reason in my mind, I thought he turned pro at like 16. 14 is pretty nuts. He goes on to say Rubio's having a career year, which I referenced earlier in the pod. Looking at Rubio's career stats, what are your thoughts on his jump in several statistical categories, especially considering his struggles early in the season? I mean, can he keep up this level of play? Brian, we kind of hit on this already. He's looking to attack the rim more, finishing at the rim, distributing like he usually does. But I feel like with LaVine off the court, Rubio has the ball in his hands more to start possessions. And that's led to good things. I think that's a big part of it. Brian, your thoughts?
I agree. I think that helps a lot. Ricky knows how to find guys as well as anyone. And he's not one of those traditional ball stoppers. You know, he's not like when you say Ricky needs the ball in his hands, it's because he wants to find someone. As soon as there's a seam, he's going to get someone the ball in a good spot. So I'm fine with those possessions going to Ricky. Honestly, I think the lesson is if we got a better version of Brandon Rush in there and either brought LaVine off the bench or maybe traded him for a more established player, I think we could be really nice.
Yeah, I agree. Pete finishes the pod saying, if someone were to go to Minneapolis and perhaps Chicago too, what are your top five spots for good eats that represent the city? For instance, is there a place Brian always tries to visit when he's back in Minneapolis?
Oh, of course there is.
Keep on keeping on from Norway Pete. Good email. Thanks. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it. Brian, what are your spots?
Well, number one is probably 112 Eatery. Now you go for one.
Yeah, I mean, that'd probably be my number one, too. Bar La Grasse is probably my next one. Same ownership group. Both just unbelievable restaurants.
Yep, that's another really, really strong one. You know, I'm going to go with Pizza Luce just because I end up getting it every time I'm home just because it always delivers. It's just like when I want wings, they're still some of my favorite wings in the world, if not my absolute favorite. And the sandwiches are always the bomb and the pizza's always okay. It's never as good as I think it's going to be. But yeah, Luce feels like Minneapolis to me.
That's a good point. Luce, I mean, I'm dead broke because I get Pizza Luce. It's like the most expensive pizza ever. But Lately, this is bad, but my thing lately when I go to Wolves games is I park at a meter over by Pizza Luce because they're always open for some reason. The meter spots are, and it's only like 3 blocks to the game. You end up paying $6 to park at the meter versus 13 in the ABC ramp. And then at the end of the game, Brian, I'm right next to Pizza Luce, so I might as well bring some pizza home.
You're a good man.
Yeah, just a good family man. So Luce is a good call. I really like Corner Table in South Minneapolis.
Mm.
That's a strong place. Manny's for a steakhouse, I think, is by far the best steakhouse in the city. Those are really top of my list. Ocean Air is really good seafood too.
No, Ocean Air.
It's really expensive though, is my problem with Ocean Air.
Yeah, like of course they have good seafood. When you fly it in, you charge a ton of money for it. It's like, come on.
Yeah, that's true. Any place you want to add before we move on? Any Chicago spots, Brian?
What? To Minneapolis? What do you mean?
No, Pete asked maybe Chicago spots as well. Maybe you just want to...
Oh, he did say that. Oh,
drop
Pete.
One or two Chicago spots.
Oh, Pete. Yeah, I've got a couple little spots that I like. There's a little neighborhood Italian place by me called Vinci that I love. Really cheap, really delicious, great value. And just has that feel of like classy neighborhood Chicago Italian you'd be looking for when you come visit. Burger wise, there's a lot of really good options. My favorite burger I've had here is, it's a chain though, but it's still really good. Umami Burger is fantastic. And then there's a lot of really good Mexican here. There's a lot of good late night, like had a few drinks, Mexican places. Angela's Burrito Style is my favorite. So check it out. And then Everyone Likes Deep Dish. I'm a Pequod's guy.
I'm with you on Pequod's. That is really good. We ordered it one time when I was in town, Brian, and it, for some reason, it's like one of my best Chicago memories. The pizza was so good. It just made me so really happy. Good.
I actually still remember the pizza. It was at my old apartment. It was the bomb.
Yeah, it was. I remember it was like we're splitting it with like three or four people, and there wasn't quite enough pizza. And usually, you know, when there's like two slices left or one slice left, you like generally don't eat it because it's like a Minnesota nice thing. And I totally just kept eating. I ate it until it was gone. Like, I didn't care. It was so good.
Good for you.
All right. Any tweets, Brian?
Most of the tweets this week were liking some of our sick posts. So make sure to follow us at Timbo's Podcast. But no questions on Twitter this week.
Well, keep the emails and tweets coming, guys. TimberWolvesPodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at TWolvesPodcast. Brian, I think you have a Where Are They Now segment ready.
I do have one, though I'm pretty sure you've done it before, and we're about to find out.
All right, let's do it. Drop it on me.
Okay, well, this player attended Mount Carmel High School in Chicago, where he played with future NFL quarterback Donovan McNabb. Have we done this one yet? Can you tell already?
Yeah, you have like a super long pause there. Like, are you going to get it?
You going to get it?
You don't even know who it is yet?
I feel like you would remember the McNabb thing, so let's keep going.
Yeah, this isn't sounding familiar.
Earning a full scholarship to play in college at the University of Kentucky. He was a starting forward on the Wildcats' 1996 NCAA Men's Division I Basketball Championship game-winning team. As a freshman at Kentucky, he was named SEC Tournament MVP in his sophomore year. He was All-SEC First Team, All-SEC Regional Team, and All-NCAA Regional Team. After sophomore year, he declared for the 96 NBA Draft, was picked 6th overall by the Boston Celtics. In the 1996-1997 season, he made the All-Rookie First Team and led the team in scoring as the team had its worst season in franchise history at 15-67. The following year, this is too much detail.
Is this the dude who would just jack up threes? I can't remember his name.
I don't remember. I don't know who you're talking about.
Keep going. I think I know who it is.
Yeah, he was an all-star 3 times in Boston before being traded to the Dallas Mavericks. 9.5 days before the start of the 2003 season, he was traded with Tony Delk to the Dallas Mavericks for Rafe LaFrance, Chris Mills, and Yuri Welch. He was using limited capacity. And basically, this was the end of his career. He was traded back to the Celtics at one point in a deal that sent Gary Payton, Tom Gugliotta, Michael Stewart, and a first-round pick to the Hawks. And he started the remaining games for the Celtics, averaging 16-8, before going down to Miami in a 13-player deal, the largest trade in NBA history. Okay, can you just guess who it is yet?
I can like picture him. He was bald. He'd wear a headband. I think he was left-handed.
He has a French name.
Man, I'm really drawing a blank on his name though.
Okay, I'll keep going. The Heat played said player mostly off the bench. He rotated between forward positions, though he struggled early to adjust. By the end of the season, he was a force for the Heat, finished the season with 12 points, 5 rebounds. It's the team's main scorer off the bench. Believe it or not, he also led the team in overall three-point shots made and increased his shooting percentage each year. In October 24th, 2007, he was traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves along with Michael Doliak, Wayne Simmien, a first-round pick, in exchange for Ricky Davis and Mark Blount. On June 27th, following that season, he was dealt to the Grizzlies along with Marco Yarich, Greg Buckner, and the rights to O.J. Mayo for Mike Miller, Brian Cardinal, Jason Collins, and the rights to one, Kevin Love. And then he played one more game with the Grizzlies, and then he was waived. In February 2010, 2 years later, he signed with the Guayambo Mets along with former NBA player Marcus Fizer, and was released.
Antoine Walker.
Yes.
God, I don't know why I couldn't remember the freaking guy's name.
That took a long
time.
Do you know who the Guayambo?
I knew who it was. I forgot his name.
Do you know the Guaynabo Nets are based?
No.
Puerto Rico. What are the odds that there was two NBA players on this random Puerto Rican team? All right. Following that, he didn't really play again. He tried to turn in the NBA, played with the Idaho Stampede for a couple years, and then retired in April 2012.
What's he up to now?
Great question. On May 18, 2010, he fired for Chapter 7 bankruptcy with total assets of $4 million and debts of $13 million, which is crazy because he made like $150 million playing basketball. $108 million playing basketball.
How much fun did he have? How fun would it be to spend, like, after taxes, like $60 million in like 5 years?
Yeah, and he still had like $8 million of debt, which like he spent... He spent a lot of money. Anyways, where is he now? Now he is a basketball analyst on 120 Sports, and he was also hired by the SEC Network as a basketball analyst. If you're wondering what 120 Sports is, I am too. I'm on their website. It appears to be some type of sports service. It's not clear what it is.
Okay. That was a good one. I don't think we have done Antoine Walker, probably because I couldn't remember his name and never thought to look him up.
Fair enough.
Brian... Do you want to go through these games?
Let's do it real quick.
All right. We're doing it very fast. We're going to start with a 107.
It's the only way Adam does it.
107-91 win against the Clippers.
Ooh, we're doing all seven. All right. Let's go.
Yeah, we got to go really fast through these. Let's just throw out a good and a bad from each game. I'll go good. I got to give this one to my boy, Karl Anthony Towns. 29. 14, only 2 assists, but plus 23. Really nice game.
Yeah, I actually can't believe that we won when the Clippers tried. They actually started all the good players, and we just beat them, which is pretty rare.
I know, just wire to wire.
Yeah, pretty awesome game. For the bad, I'm just going to go with Jamal Crawford. He's a guy who usually just torches the Timberwolves for whatever reason. I feel like the bench guys who just greenlight themselves always do well against us because we play such sloppy D, but... This was during our good defense streak, and Jamal Crawford was terrible, going 2 for 9 with 7 points. So by going bad, I'm giving a compliment to the Wolves D.
We were due to get some good variance from these freaking players, like you said, who always torture us. Like it's nice when they don't have good games against us.
I'll take it.
Let's move on to the really highlight of the last couple weeks. 103-102 win at home against Golden State. Was kind of in doubt at the end. I thought we were going to blow this game. We got outscored 26-15 in the fourth quarter. Steph Curry did have a chance to win the game at the end, did not make the shot, luckily enough. And Wiggins did make a couple clutch free throws, if I remember right, near the very end of the game as well. Brian, you can go good on this one.
Yeah, for the good, I'm going to go with the obvious choice, our boy Ricky Rubio. 17 points, 13 assists, 4 rebounds, and 11 for 11 from the line, just attacking, which is what you have to do when you can't shoot the ball that well.
Very good points. Very good point, Brian. My bad. Man, there's not a lot of like bad things from this game. All of our starters played decently well. I mean, Brandon Rush only had 2 points, but whatever. He's not out there to score. I want to give a good as well. I want to give our boy Andrew Wiggins a good. just because really clutch down the stretch, put up 24 points, 4 rebounds, no assists, somehow had 2 steals. Those must have been accidental. But nice game by Wiggins.
For sure.
Moving on to a 102-95 loss at Milwaukee. You know, a little bit of a letdown game after those 2 ridiculous wins by us. I'll give out the good to this game. It's close between Ricky and Towns. I think I'm going Towns, though. Just monster. 35-14, 1-1-2 game. A lot of that against the Greek Freak, who is strong defensively. So, impressive.
Yep. For the bad, I'm going to go with our three-point shooting as a team. Only shot 13. The only players to make any threes were Towns and Rubio, combining to go 5-for-8. The rest of the team went 0-for-5. And we're kind of back to where we were last year. Actually, especially lately, we just haven't been shooting enough threes. And when I say lately, I mean the last 3 games we played terrible. And I think that's part of why we're getting our butts kicked.
Absolutely. Well, plus, if you look at the last 3 games, we let up 117 against Boston, 123 against Miami, 123 against New Orleans. Our defense has been terrible.
It hurts when you let up 120 points. I know.
What?
I said it hurts when you let up 120 points.
Oh, yeah, it does. It really does. That was a good summary of what I said. Let's move on to 119-104 win at home against the Wizards.
A statement win, as Zach Lowe called it.
This was just a solid win. Like, we pulled out to a huge lead within the first 7 minutes of the game and really never looked back. It did get kind of close at one point in the third quarter, but then we turned it on. I mean, the good for this game absolutely has to go to Ricky Rubio. Just a monster game. 22 points on 8-for-15 from the floor, 2-for-5 from 3, 4-for-4 from the three-point line. But most impressively, that franchise record, 19 assists, also added 5 rebounds, 3 steals. Did have 6 turnovers, but whatever. Unbelievable game by Rubio. He had a pass in this game, Brian. I don't know if you saw this pass, but it was to Bielitsa. It was a bounce pass to Belly. Belly was cutting towards the hoop, and like Rubio threaded the ball at this angle that it ended up in Bielitsa's hands, and even he looked surprised. It was an unreal pass. Good for you, Ricky.
Good for you, Ricky. You kind of just yada yada. Towns is 39-13 on 17-of-26 shooting, which was pretty absurd in its own right. But obviously the other good goes to Belly. 6-for-7 from the floor, 9 rebounds, 2 assists in his last good game before getting hurt. Plus 17 off the bench. We'll miss you, Belly.
Yes, we will. We got to finish on the 3 losses. 104-117 loss at Boston. Brian, you can find the good in this one.
Yes, I can. I can find the good in anything. And it's going to be our boy, Ricky Rubio, again, just enjoying a hot streak. 23 points, 7 assists, 8-of-14, 3-for-5 from 3, just lighting it up. And just continue to play really well against some of the league's best point guards.
My bad is going to go to Gorgie. Did have a particularly awful game, put up 8 points, 9 rebounds. But just in general, as we talked about earlier in the pod, Brian, been underperforming lately. And defensively in this game, didn't bring much. Yeah, that's all I
got. Gorgie's a bad defender, not a great offensive guy. Makes $16 million a year.
Yes, he does. Let's move on. 105-123 loss at Miami. Brian, you were particularly angry after this game. You sent off some texts, which you don't often do after a game.
I texted, I tweeted. I had a lot of feels after this game.
Yeah, this one really got to you. I guess I'll do the good and you can do the bad because you're obviously upset at this one. My good, it's got to go to Ricardo, putting up 20 points on 8-for-14 from the field. Did only have 6 assists in this one, 2 steals, 1 block. Somehow no rebounds, not very Rubio-like, but I love when he's efficient scoring the ball. Gotta give him the good.
Yep. Just an interesting call. We haven't had Wiggins as our good in any of these games. He's been not great lately. Over the last 5, averaging 19.6, shooting 40%, only shooting 6 free throws a game, and shooting 69% at the line, 30% from 3. He's really mean regressed as of late, and it's been super disappointing. And just the way he plays has also been really bad. If you watch this game, shot a lot of long twos, which he's getting a really bad habit of doing lately. But the bad for this game goes to Towns' defense. Hassan Whiteside was 10-for-11. I think of those 10, like at least 8 or 9 were wide open dunks on pick and rolls where he just wasn't there or even close. And that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. We got out rebounded in this one as well. 28-40. Not so good.
No, we're just letting these games slip away too. Like we're in this game until the fourth quarter. Then all of a sudden there was just like a bunch of pick and rolls and we just said, screw it. I don't really need to win, which is kind of what happened the following game with the Pelicans.
Good segue. 109-123 loss at New Orleans. You're right. This is kind of what happened in this game. We were in it. We got outscored by 10 in the fourth quarter, ended up losing by 14.
You were winning most of the game until the very end of the third.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, and it's tough. It reminds me of games earlier in the year or in games in past years. Brian, you can do the good. I'll do the bad.
Yeah, good for me for this guy. Goes to Towns, 33 points, 14-27. 4-for-8 from three. Shooting threes just a lot better lately, being more selective, shooting less step backs. Only 6 rebounds, no blocks. He's, he's like not even interested in getting blocks anymore. Over the last 4 games, he has 0 blocks, which is not good for like a 7-foot-3 dude.
No, it's really not so good. My bad is... It pains me to give the bad to Chris Dunn because he's my boy, but just in general, when he's not even a threat to shoot the ball, and this is the same knock I've had with Rubio for a long time, it really messes things up, especially when he's with some of the bench guys who are even less effective scorers than our starting unit. It makes it tough. I mean, he put up 2 points in this game on 1-for-3 from the field, but just the fact that defenses don't have to guard him makes it hard. It's the same knock on Rubio, and it sucks.
That's our boy.
That's a show, Brian. You got anything else?
No. One thing that's interesting is Remy Martin now has Jeremy Renner as their spokesperson after having Robin Thicke for a while. They have a thing for kind of dorky, only slightly famous middle-aged white guys, which is really weird.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. I've noticed a trend in commercials. I feel like it's more acceptable for celebrities to just, like, endorse whatever than it used to be. It seemed like it used to just be, like, A-list sports stars. And now it's just, like, you see, like, B and C-list actors and actresses endorsing random things. Like, I saw Kristen Bell endorsing Enterprise rental car. It's like, what is she? Like, yeah, I'm sure she's using that a lot. Anyways, I don't blame them. It's free money for them, but it's become accepted, I think.
Yeah, why not? Shouldn't it be? Wouldn't we all if we had the chance?
Yeah, again, I don't blame them. Maybe I'm just jealous. Anyways, thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate it, including the international listeners. Please keep the emails coming, timberwolvespodcast@gmail.com, and the tweets coming at @TWolvesPodcast. We'll talk to you guys in a week or two. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.